Lord Chaitanya, passing through the Jarikanda forest on his way to Vrindavan. You can't hear me? I never had that problem before. I don't have that problem where they can't hear me. Even judges hear me very well. Okay. All right, I'm going to read a couple of verses here for recollection purposes, because I understand you just do Chaitanya Charitamrita on Saturdays, right? Okay, so this is a nice little story, and I'll just read a few of the preliminary verses and then go up to 36 in English first. When the Lord passed through the solitary forest chanting the holy name of Krishna, the tigers and elephants, seeing him, gave way. When the Lord passed through the jungle in great ecstasy, packs of tigers, elephants, rhinoceros, and boars came. And the Lord passed right through them. Balabhadra Bhattacharya was very much afraid to see them, but by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's influence, all the animals stood to one side. One day a tiger was lying on the path, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, walking along the path in ecstatic love, touched the tiger with his feet. The Lord said, "Chant the holy name of Krishna." The tiger immediately got up and began to chant and dance. Krishna, Krishna. Another day, while Lord Chaitanya was bathing in the river, a herd of maddened elephants came there to drink water. While the Lord was bathing and murmuring the Gayatri Mantra, I thought that was interesting, murmuring the Gayatri Mantra, the elephants came before him. The Lord immediately spat some water on the elephants and asked them to chant the name of Krishna. Now, we're up to date now. The elephants, whose bodies were touched by the water, splashed by the Lord, began to chant, "Krishna, Krishna," and dance in ecstasy. Some of the elephants fell to the ground, and some screamed in ecstasy. Seeing this, Balabhadra Bhattacharya was completely astonished. Sometimes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted very loudly while passing through the jungle. Hearing his sweet voice, all the does came near him. Hearing the Lord's great vibration, all the does followed him left and right. While reciting a verse with great curiosity, the Lord patted them. Okay, this is the verse that I think we can do, because this verse is actually, the purport refers to the Bhagavatam, a verse in the Bhagavatam. So, Bhagavatam 10:21-11. Oh, that's not up here, though, is it? Oh, it is up here. Okay. Danya. Sma. Mudha. Gatiyo. Ti. Harinya. Eta. Ya Nanda Nandanam Upata Tichitra Desham Akanya Venu Anitam Saha Krishna Sada Pujam Dadur Vidyachitam Kana Yavalokai Danyasma Mudho Gatayopi Harinyadeta
Danyasma Mudho Gatayopi Harinyadeta
Danyasma Mudho Gatayopi Harinyadeta
Danyasma Mudho Gatayopi
Harinyadeta Yananda Nandanam Upata Vichitra Vesham Yananda Nandanam Pata Vichitra Vesham Akanya Venu Ranitam Saha Krishna Sarada
Akanya Venu
Ranitam
Saha Krishna
Sarada Pujam Dador Vida Chitam Punya Vaya Lokai
Pujam Dador Vida Chitam Punya Vaya Lokai
Pujam Pudur Vira Chitam Panaya Balokai. Fortunate, blessed. Actually, does it say that up there? Oh, yeah, at the end. Okay. Fortunate, blessed. That's Sma, certainly. Mudagataya. Having taken birth in an ignorant animal species. Api. Do we have different versions or something? I just pulled this off.
But that's okay.
All right, well, anyway, I don't know what to say about that. Hiranya,
Dishidir,
Eta,
these,
Ya,
who,
Nanda Nandanam,
the
son of Maharaj Nanda. Patavichi Vichitra Visham, dressed very attractively. Akanya, hearing. Venu Ranitam, the sound of his flute. Saha
Krishna Sara,
accompanied by the black deer, their husbands. Pujam Dadu, they worship. Virajitam, perform. Pranaya Avalokai, by their affectionate glances. Now I'm afraid to repeat reading this. I don't know. Anyway, translation. Blessed are all these foolish deer, because they have approached Maharajananda's son, who is gorgeously dressed and is playing on his flute. Indeed, both the doe and the bucks worship the Lord with looks of love and affection. Purport. This translation is quoted from Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 1736. According to the Acharyas, the gopis were thinking as follows. The female deer can approach Krishna along with their husbands because Krishna is the ultimate object of affection for the male deer. Because of their affection for Krishna, they are encouraged by seeing their wives attracted to him and thus considered their household lives fortunate. Indeed, they became joyful upon seeing how their wives are searching after Krishna and following along, they urge their wives to go to the Lord. On the other hand, our husbands are jealous of Krishna, and because of their lack of devotion to him, they cannot even stand to smell his fragrance. Therefore, what is the use of our lives? That gets to the point. Anyway, this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is taking off for Vrindavan, and his associates, Sarup Damodar and Ramanuja, Ramananda Roy, they were very concerned about the Lord, because Lord Chaitanya had a tendency, he wanted to go alone. And as we know, sometimes Lord Chaitanya would get himself into a little bit of difficulty from our material point of vision. He would fall into great ecstatic moods of love for Krishna or Radharani and pass out unconscious. So Sarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy were very concerned. They didn't want him to go by himself, so they were imploring him, please take somebody with you. So Lord Chaitanya agreed, after a great debate, to take Balabhadra Bhattacharya as his servant. And when I first looked at this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I first thought of 1974, I believe it was, in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada was there during the Gaur Purnima festival. And one day we were out on Parikrama and we came back. And somehow, I don't know, remember how exactly it happened, I ended up in Prabhupada's quarters. I think it was 74 because the quarters weren't finished at that time. But Prabhupada was in a very good mood. He was very happy. He was very relaxed and very approachable because Vrindavan was being built. Krishna Balaram Temple was being built. And then we're in his quarters and somebody did a bhajan whose name I won't mention because Prabhupada didn't like the way he was chanting, so he stopped it and told somebody else to lead kirtan, even though it was a bhajan. I don't remember who the bhajan was by, Bhakti Vinod or Narottam or somebody. But afterwards, Prabhupada was commenting on this verse, and he said, this chanting and dancing in the association of devotees is very powerful. It has great potency. And then he said something that we all heard things that Prabhupada would say from time to time, or other spiritual masters and new generations hear your guru say something that sticks in your mind and kind of keeps you going through all the years and so forth. And so when Prabhupada was giving his purport after saying about the chanting and dancing and the association of devotees, he said, even the association of devotees becomes intolerable. You must still tolerate. So I always remembered that for some reason or another. Those of us who have been around for a while probably can appreciate that instruction. So whenever things got a little bit tense, you might say, I just remembered Prabhupada's admonition, tolerate the intolerable. And of course, we can't do that unless we're chanting and dancing. And so when all else fails, when everything else, no matter what is going on, we all come together and we chant and we dance, then all these problems disappear. All of our differences, all of our animosities, when we're chanting with our God brothers and our God sisters, then we're all unified. We're all in the same mission. We're all want the same thing, and that's to please Prabhupada. That if we don't please Srila Prabhupada, then what's the point? I may do something, and it may be pleasing to me, and I may like this, and I may enjoy this, but if Prabhupada is not satisfied, then it's a failure. Now, on the other hand, this sound vibration, or chanting and dancing, what this really means is the sound vibration. The material world is created by sound. I believe the first sound is what? Tapa was emanated from Lord Brahma. And then all these universes manifested from sound vibration. So we know that this sound vibration, it's scientific. Many times Prabhupada was asked, what is your religion? They would refer to Krishna consciousness as a religion. And Prabhupada many times would say, no, this is not religion, this is science. He would call it science, because the mantra is a scientific process. You can do a, what do they call it, experiment by chanting and engaging in the process, and you will get the results. By personal experimentation, there will be an automatic result. So therefore, Prabhupada says, not religion, it is science. And the science of sound vibration. Now, I have a personal experience of sound vibration having a great impact, and which I also thought about when I was looking at this verse, or these verses. In 1972, they had the Republican convention. Kind of a timely example, because when the political season is now upon us, and it will get worse. It's going to get worse. It's just getting started. And previously, of course, I was in California, so there is no real political, or I should say for the last 3 decades I was in California. Before that, I was here. But as some people may remember, who have very, very good memories. But California is not a big deal, because everybody is a left-winger, progressive, and very liberal, and there's no real tension or no real suspense of how these elections are going to come out. But Florida is a different situation. It's going to get very nasty here. And what these politicians do is they exploit the sound waves. They give, you know, they try to convince people. But I was listening to some a lecture by Prabhupada the other day, and he said, this is how we become entangled in the material world, by sound vibration. The things that we listen to, the things that we associate, this is what, before anything else, this is what we, this is what gets us entangled in the material world. And you can see how powerful it is. I don't like to bring this up, but I kind of like follow, you know, like to study military history, especially World War II and things of that sort. And if you look at Hitler, and don't follow Hitler, just observe him in a scientific way. The way he was able to get Germany to do exactly what he wanted was sound vibration. If you look at his speeches, he knew exactly what he was doing. And he would manipulate his sound vibration in such a way that by the time his speech was over, everybody was just ready to do whatever he wanted. Because sound vibration is the key to all of the other entanglements in the material world. So in 1972, we had an In God We Trust political party that was named by Prabhupada. It was a long time ago. A lot of people may not remember it. It didn't last very long, but it was fun while it did. And so I was involved in that, and I decided, well, we should go down to Miami, and we should start a food program in Peacock Park, not Peacock, but Flamingo Park on Miami Beach, where all the protesters and the hippies and the yuppies, or the yippies and the SDS, they were all camping out in this park on Miami Beach called Flamingo Park. Peacock Park is the park in the Grove. And so so I went down there and with Mahavir, interestingly, who we just heard about a little while ago, my old friend, we organized a food program, a feeding program in Flamingo Park, where we were feeding all of the people every day. And that was actually the only real food that they got. And just an aside, since we are in this political season, Prabhupada would emphasize to us in letters and so forth, he would talk about the politicians and what crooks they are, they're dacoits and so forth, they're the biggest criminals, et cetera, et cetera, and get into some of these issues. But then he said, always remember, don't forget, our platform is very simple, that regularly the townspeople, which is the phrase he used, should come together and chant Hare Krishna and have festivals. And then afterwards, there should be wide-scale distribution of sumptuous Krishna prasadam. He said, who will not be attracted to such a platform? So this was, and this is actually the way that the Vedic kings, the Krishna conscious kings work. In Vedic culture, everyone is taxed 25% right off the top. You pay there's none of these loopholes, there's none of these deductions and this and that. Everybody pays 25%. And that goes to the king. But with that money, with those tax revenue, the king is supposed to perform jagyas. In this case, that would be big festivals where people chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, etc., etc. And if he didn't do that, then the people did not have to pay taxes. Then he was a crook. Then he was a thief like the others. So the great Rajarsis, the Krishna conscious leaders, they would perform these wonderful jagyas with the tax money. Then everything was very auspicious throughout the kingdom. There was no shortage. There was no scarcity of anything. And, of course, we know in Varnashram Dharma, when in 1977, that was why Srila Prabhupada was coming back to America to establish Varnashram Dharma. Unfortunately, he could only make it to London, then he had to go back. But in Varnashram Dharma, it's a very scientific system. That everybody has everything that they need. And the Sudras, interestingly, the workers who serve the other three Varnas, they get all the food they can eat, they get all the nice shelter, clothing, everything, but they do not get paid. They do not get money. Because the Sudra mentality will go out and spend that money on illicit things. But nonetheless, they have everything else they want. And it's described that because the earth planet, Bhumi was satisfied, the demigods were satisfied, of course, and Krishna was satisfied by all these jagyas of the Krishna conscious leaders, that the earth would supply everything that anybody could possibly want. Fruits would grow anywhere, the water was clean, the air was fresh, vegetables were everywhere. It's described that valuable jewels such as diamonds and rubies, you could just walk down a riverbank and pick them up. You didn't have to dig these big cavernous mines into the earth to obtain them. But the earth was so satisfied by these jagyas that all material necessities were supplied for the people in that kingdom. So anyway, the sound vibration is very important, and we were in this feeding these people down at the park in Miami Beach in 1972, and then one night we went on Harinam. Mono, were you in Miami in 72? Were you still there?
Yeah.
Were you out there with us that night?
I don't remember.
What's that?
I don't remember.
Okay. I know Mahavir was there, because we talk about it all the time. Anyway, we went out where they were having the convention, and we did not know at the time, but we found out later on, there were some Vietnam vets here in Gainesville that later became known as the Gainesville Eight. And we, actually, they were very friendly with us. They were all Vietnam veterans who were against the war. And they would take Prashadam a lot, and we were very friendly with them. So they were planning to disrupt the Republican convention. They were going to storm the convention hall, and Nixon was the person that was on the ballot, and they were going to storm it and disrupt it and create chaos. And we didn't know that. So one night we're out there on Hamiparinam, and there's thousands of demonstrators out there. And we were on the sidewalk in front of the convention center. And so we were just going single file in and out of the crowd. And it was just getting dark, so we couldn't really see very well. And so we were just weaving our way through the crowd. And then all of a sudden, all these TV lights lit up. And because we were photogenic or something, they like taking pictures of our robes and jackets and stuff like that, sorry. And anyway, so all these lights lit up, and we looked on one side, and we saw thousands of anti-war demonstrators. And they were very angry, and they would chant their mantras, 1, 2, 3, 4, we don't want your blank and more, things like that. And they were all doing it in unison. And they were very angry, they were very worked up, they were pumping themselves up for this big, what do they call it, they were going to storm the convention center. So we looked out, and one side, there's thousands of them. And they're mad and angry and screaming and yelling and doing their chants. Then we looked on the other side, and then there were hundreds and hundreds of cops. And National Guardsmen and Highway Patrolmen, and they had their gas masks on. You don't remember that?
I wasn't there.
Okay, you would remember that. Okay, you wouldn't remember that. Sridham was leading the Sankirtan party. He was playing the mridanga. He was a fantastic mridanga player. But anyway, so on the other side, there are like thousands of cops and German shepherds and billy clubs and gas masks. And so we look one side, we see all these demonstrators. We look at the other side, there's all these cops and soldiers. And I said, we're going to die. And the whole Sankirtan party, when we saw what was going on, it just spontaneously went up in the air. Everybody just jumped right up in the air. I've never seen a Sankirtan party jump that high, because it was just adrenaline. And we thought we were finished, and so the whole Sankirtan party just jumped right up in the air. Sridham started playing the mridanga like a wild man. We started chanting like crazy. And so we just kept chanting, because we were stuck in the middle of this big confrontation. And the anti-war people, they were coming up to us, and they started screaming, you got to stop this. You guys got to get out of here. You're ruining our demonstration. Because the more we chanted, they had created a certain mood or atmosphere with their sound vibration, with their mantras that they were chanting. And they had got the people to respond in the way they wanted them to respond. But we were chanting, and that was disrupting, that was purifying the ether, you could say. And so gradually, a few people in front, they kind of got mellowed out a little bit. They started dancing. And a few more people started dancing, and then a few more people started dancing. Allen Ginsberg was there. He came over. He started doing his little twirly, I don't know what you call it, like this, dance like this. And he came over there, and he was dancing with us. And the anti-war leaders were furious, and they were just screaming at us. But the rest of the whole crowd just mellowed out after a while. We were chanting, they were listening, the sound vibration of the mantra was purifying the ether, and the whole crowd mellowed out. Now, this is a true story. You can ask Mahavir. He was there too. I'm not making this up. And so then there was a Miami Beach detective that we were friendly with. He came over and he said, why don't you guys just go work your way back to the park, Flamingo Park? And so we said, okay. So they let us out. Everybody kind of like moved out of the way, and we went we headed back to the park, and then the whole crowd followed us. Kind of like the Pied Piper. No, seriously, it's true. And so we got off at the Lincoln Road Mall, which is where we were doing Hari Nam, and the other people went back to the park, and then the detective came up to us and bought some books, and he said, you know, you guys stopped the riot. If it hadn't been for you, there would have been a lot of bloodshed out here this night. So later on, I think it was just a month or two later, up in New Vrindavan, the Prabhupada was there for his Vyasa Puja and the Janmashtami festival. I told Prabhupada that story. And he said, oh, just see the power of the holy name. So Lord Chaitanya, he's going through this forest and talk about power of the holy name. All these animals are chanting and dancing in the forest. Even though they don't have human bodies, he's still the power of the holy name. And of course, coming from Lord Chaitanya without adulteration of any kind, Prabhupada warns us in that famous lecture on the first record, milk touched by the lips of a serpent is poison. So be careful of where you hear the mantra from. You've got to hear it from the lips of a devotee of Krishna. You have to hear from a pure devotee or someone who is in the line of disciplic succession. Otherwise, you'll be misled. So Prabhupada said, yes, just see the power of the holy name. And Lord Chaitanya was able to put this, we can see an example of this when Lord Chaitanya was going through the Jarikanda forest, hit the sound vibration of Hare Krishna and was penetrating these animal bodies, and the animals were actually responding. And I think on that same record or lecture, Prabhupada was talking about, look at these little children. They may not completely understand, but they're imitating, and they're chanting, and they're dancing. And even though they don't know what they're doing, Prabhupada said, even a child can take part in this. So what to speak of a child, the animals here were chanting and dancing and responding to this. But on the other hand, we have to be very careful, as I mentioned, who we hear from, because there was an interesting darshan in 1975 at the Chicago Rath Yatra, and somehow or other, that little guy, Guru Maharaj Ji, he's not around so much anymore, but he used to dress up like Krishna, and the women would dress up like gopis, and they would imitate the rasa dance. He was a little kid. He was only 8 or 9 years old or something back in the 70s. And so somehow he came up on the topic, and Prabhupada got very angry when he heard that he was claiming to be Krishna. He was claiming to be God. So Prabhupada said, he says he is God. You kick on his face with boot. Then we will see if he is God. At that point, everybody kind of laughed. Oh, you know. Prabhupada said, no, he was serious. He says he is Krishna. He says he is God. You kick on his face with boot. Then we will see if he is God. So we were all kind of surprised at that. And I asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, but they're chanting Hare Krishna. Won't they get any benefit? And Prabhupada said, yes, but it will take them a very, 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 very long time. So whoever gets exposed to the chanting and dancing, and this is the Yuga Dharma. This is the process of self-realization and liberation in this age. People are not very intelligent. We don't live very long. There's so many anarthas in this world, so that is the Yuga Dharma, is just to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and dance, and then to take prasadam. So even if unqualified people chant the mantra or hear the mantra, they will get the benefit. It may take them longer. It's like, I don't know, probably these animals, this is just speculation, these animals probably went back to Godhead After their lives, because they got the personal association of Lord Chaitanya, is obviously their special souls. They're not ordinary souls. So, but even animals that hear the mantra, children, anybody, even people that are inimical, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when somebody would bring him an article, a newspaper article or something that had been written, and it might have even been unfavorable, but Bhaktisiddhanta would say, how many times did they say Krishna in the article? And if they said Krishna in the article, then he said, therefore it is successful. Therefore it is all right. Because they are saying Krishna. They are chanting Krishna's name. They are reading about Krishna's name. Now here another aspect of this that I was thinking about is that these are jungle animals on top of everything else. And of course, Prabhupada in many places says that the duty of the king, they're citizens of the state. The animals are praja. They're citizens. And they are also entitled to be protected by the kshatriyas from being abused and from being harmed and killed. And probably gives the example that just like the tiger or whatever it may be, if it goes into a village and it attacks some people and maybe eats them or something, whatever they do, if they cause trouble, then the villagers go out and they punish the tiger. And Prabhupada says, in no uncertain terms, in the same way, if a human goes out and harms or harasses the animals, not just the cow, not just domesticated animals, but even the jungle animals, then they must be punished also. Because all citizens, all souls that take birth in the kingdom, they're considered to be praja, citizens of the state. And of course, nowadays, it's so out of control. It's beyond anything that I think 500 years ago they could ever imagine. The Kali Yuga has gotten so bad. And the one thing that Prabhupada, he really, more so than anything else, was the systematic slaughter of the animals. This really bothered Prabhupada. It's bad enough that these pickup truck people down the street or wherever they are go out and they kill animals in the forest. They shoot deer, they shoot this and that. They go hunting. It's their blood sport. They like it. They enjoy killing these animals. But the systematic, the slaughterhouses, Prabhupada was very horrified by these things. When he was first came here to America, he was walking. Well, it was Boston. He was walking around when he composed that poem, right? Not New York. Yeah. The original poem. What am I doing here?
Yeah.
That was Boston, not right. That was Boston, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, when Prabhupada was here, he said he was looking at all these big concrete monstrosities. It's not that Prabhupada was naive. I mean, India was. At that time, the British had a lot of economic development there. There was a lot of construction and so forth, but nothing like these monstrosities that they build in these cities now, these huge skyscrapers. And Prabhupada was just walking around, and he was looking, and then he comprised the poem and said, how will they ever understand this message of Krishna? But the thing that bothered him most about these cities was the slaughterhouses. Not just the buildings, which kill so many people every year. I know my father was in the construction business, and he used to build these huge skyscrapers on Brickell Avenue and hospitals all over the country. And at one point of his career, all he was doing was testifying in court because so many workers would get injured and killed on these jobs. So these cities are built at the expense of so many lives to build these things. But even on top of that, these slaughterhouses, Prabhupada was just, horrified by these things. How will these malechas, how will these people understand? And how did they understand? Well, Prabhupada went to Tompkins Square Park and he just sat down and chanted. He just chanted the Hare Krishna mantra. And by virtue of that, he started this movement. This movement, before any of us knew the philosophy, before anybody, he preached to anybody, the first thing they heard, first thing any of us heard probably was somebody chanting, a chanting party, somebody preaching and chanting in a park or something like that. And that's how this whole movement was created, was Prabhupada sitting down in a park and following the instructions of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and just chanting Hare Krishna. And then all these people would gather around and then Prabhupada would preach. And it was the same thing here with Garga Muni. He would sit down and chant. Once he had a crowd, he would preach and explain to people our philosophy. And as a result of those little simple things, this community, let's just speak of the whole world, the whole country was developed beyond anything that anybody could imagine at that time. So nowadays, of course, I can't help but bring this up. It's just timely. The planet is under severe stress right now. And the Kali Yuga has gotten so much worse in my lifetime, at least, beyond anything that I could have ever imagined. I thought Nixon was bad and it couldn't get any worse, but so much for that. But it worse in the sense that now the planet is reacting to all of this animal slaughter in the form of this global warming and climate change. They talk about cars, they talk about fossil fuels, they talk about this, all of these, what are called greenhouse gas emissions, and then the climate is supposedly warming, and then, in another 20, 25 years, the planet will be almost uninhabitable. And they talk about this, yes, we want to do something about climate change, we've got to stop this global warming. But nobody will talk about animal slaughter. Nobody will talk about the factory farms where, and I can't help but bring this up because I'm working on a case in L.A., actually a Krishna Lunch case against UCLA, who does not want to let us do a lunch program on campus because they're afraid of it being successful and the students liking it. And then they won't buy meat anymore. They will stop buying their burgers and their other abominable substances, and so they're afraid of that, and they're fighting us very vigorously. But it's a fact that in this country, 9.5 billion animals are slaughtered every year. 9.5 billion, with a B, are slaughtered in this country alone. And the statistics on this, these big factory farms where they put these animals, the animals were subjected not only to the fact that they're killed, but they're tortured in the process. They're treated so badly. And then, for example, where there's a lot of livestock, they have to pump so many chemicals and antibiotics into the animals, because under those conditions, the animal would ordinarily die in a couple of weeks. It wouldn't live without all these antibiotics. And so Prabhupada was very, very horrified by these places. This he couldn't understand. He even said it's okay to eat meat after the animal's already dead. There's a section in the Journey of Self-Discovery where Prabhupada's explaining, after the cow is dead, then you can eat. If you have to eat meat, then you can eat. But after the cow is dead, after the animal is dead. You can't kill it while it's alive. But they won't even do that. They have to systematically slaughter this. And so there's one place where Prabhupada says in a purport, he says, if they do not stop this, there will be a catastrophic reaction. And he used that word, catastrophic reaction, for the butcher, his land, and his government. He mentions those three things. And now we're seeing, because of this, that the environment, everybody's screaming about the environment, all the political candidates on one side of the political spectrum, not the other side, are saying climate change, global warming, we have to do this, we have to stop. But every single real scientist has said that you cannot cure this problem unless you shut down these factory farms, these slaughterhouses. Because the reaction is so bad. And then here is another interesting thing. This may be a little controversial. But in the same passage, it's in Journal of Self-Discovery. It's a room conversation. You can look it up. I have the site to it if you need it. The prophet is connecting the abortion issue to the animal slaughter. So sometimes we have debates, oh, which is worse, abortion or animal slaughter? One political party, they're going to stop abortion. The other political party, they're going to stop climate change, blah, blah, blah. Although they never mention stopping animal slaughter. So that whole idea is defective. But we say, no, no, this party's better because they're against abortion. Prophet says that because of animal slaughter, because they're eating meat, therefore they take birth in a certain family where, not that they just take birth as an animal and get slaughtered in their next life, they get killed in their next life. The prophet says they take birth in a family of human beings and then they are aborted in the womb by the mother. While in their previous life, you killed your mother. In this life, your mother will kill you. So you can't really separate it. You can't really do one without the other because it's all happening on a higher karmic level where animal slaughter and abortion are karmically connected. And like I say, it's in the Journey of Self-Discovery. I'm not making this up. It's not my own personal political propaganda to advance my own agenda, whatever that might be at my age, which is somehow stay alive every day and do something. But when I read this, I just said, well, this Kali Yuga has gotten so bad. And that's why Lord Chaitanya established this very, very simple process. This very, very simple process. No meditation, and you got to do this, and you got to do that, and all this other stuff. There is no material solution to these problems. There is no political solution to these problems. There is no cultural solution to these problems. The only solution is Krishna consciousness. So, you're all going out to the Oaks Mall. And it's interesting because what they do is they celebrate these holidays. And Christmas in particular. And every time Prabhupada is asked something about Christianity, the first thing he says, and almost invariably, Christ said, thou shalt not kill. Why are you killing? They say, oh, I'm a Christian. We have our religion. Say, okay, that's okay. But Christ said, thou shalt not kill. So why are you killing? And that's Christmas. I mean, how can they claim to be followers of Jesus Christ when they slaughter 9.5 billion, that's just in this country, who knows, Europe, South America. I think the figure is 60, 70 billion animals worldwide every year. And there's no question of Christmas. There's no question of a spiritualized planet. There's no question of solving these problems without electing Krishna conscious leaders. And those Krishna conscious leaders have to be, if it's not going to happen in my lifetime, well, it could happen in my next life or the life after that. I'll be back for sure. So I may see it in one of my future lives, but not this life. It's not going to happen. But unless they do that, the conditions are going to get worse and worse and worse. And the only way that they're going to come to their senses is by this Harinam, by this chanting and dancing and the association of devotees, going out there, exposing as many people as we possibly can to the holy name. Prabhupada also said that distributing his books are none different than chanting the holy name, Brihat Madanga. So chanting Harinam and distributing Prabhupada's books as widely as possible. And that's something else he said when we had the Ungodly Trust Party. He said he was realistic. He knew we weren't going to win, because to win, the things that you have to do to get elected are unacceptable. We can never, ever do the things that other politicians do to get elected. He said, this is a good opportunity to preach widely and distribute my books.
And prasadam.
That's the political platform. But you're right. I mean, in the letters that I got from Prabhupada, he said, preach widely and distribute my books. And then he said, as the political platform, people come together, chant, and then distribute prasadam. It's all connected. There's not really any difference. But nobody is saying anything about these things. You can listen to the debates, you can listen to all the, look at the ads and everything else, and everybody's saying global warming, climate change, this and that, but they will never, as they say, when somebody up in New York, a new congresswoman said, proposed what's called the Green New Deal, and then immediately there was people in that other party, they said, oh, they're going to take our hamburgers away. That's what they said. They freaked out, and they used it as a campaign fundraising. They're going to take the socialists, the liberals, the progressives, they're going to take our hamburgers away. Yeah, we're going to take their hamburgers away. Darn right we are. And all their hot dogs and their turkeys and everything else and all the disgusting things that they use to celebrate. This is how they celebrate holidays in this country. They have a big meal filled with dead animals and liquor and all these other things, and that's how they celebrate Christmas. Christ said, thou shalt not kill. So how will they ever solve any of these problems? So anyway, yes. You had your hand up.
I like that.
Something stuck in me that you said, very nice thing, just to appreciate. You said Krishna consciousness is a science of the sound vibration, not a religion. Very nice, thank you. But I have a question until today I was not as afraid of the slaughterhouse. I got a little afraid, fear. I thought when Prabhupada came, there was hardly any vegetarian march, and it was not respected in a high society. But now, 5% Americans are vegan.
Yes.
So there is a positive, since Prabhupada influenced through the devotees, of course, book distribution and other, it's changing. I see in a dramatic change. I mean, when you go to a high-class restaurant, you say you are vegetarian, they really look up to you like you are gentleman or something special. Before, even when I came to America 30 years back, they didn't even look at me like something. They would think like something is wrong, he's vegetarian. He doesn't know how to eat or something. So I think positive things in a sense, I'm not trying to be positive artificially, but seeing that actually it is happening, 5% is a lot of people.
No,
17 million.
Yeah, I agree with that. And actually, as one little parsing that down a little further, I know sometimes devotees get a little carried away. Oh, the vegans are bad people. They're not drinking cow's milk, or they're not eating ghee, and they're not doing this and that. But from my perspective, as you were saying, when in the early 60s and 70s, a vegetarian diet meant organic brown rice with some soy sauce and some steamed broccoli. And I know in my case, I would do it as long as I could, and then I would run to In-N-Out because I couldn't do it anymore. It was not pleasing my tongue, which is another aspect of chanting. The tongue is the key to spiritual life. And one little interesting anecdote, my friend Pushta Krishna Maharaj, who joined here in Gainesville from the university, he was a pre-med student, he writes that when he was coming to the Krishna house and for lunch, or for everything, he was hanging out there, but he says that he saw Krishna. He had a vision of Krishna. And an older devotee, our god sister Rasangi, many of you may know her, she's been a devotee for a long time. I was on the phone with her when Krishna was in his last, before he departed, and she asked me, well, did you see Krishna too? I said, yes, I did see Krishna. Krishna manifested to me in Gargamuni's hot butter chapatis. So it's such a different world. And so for me, I think vegans are great because they're not killing animals. Okay, they're a little fanatical. They go a little too far. But they're right. I mean, the way the cows are milked and the way the cows are treated on these farms, and after they're finished milking, they're done with their milk, they sell them off to the slaughterhouse. Mother is being sent to the slaughterhouse. So I can understand their point of view, but you're right. Things, and I do believe, and I'm not, I know I'm going to say this because I'm a devotee, and we think, you know, the world revolves around us, and everything good in the world is coming from us. But it is a fact. We were practically the first vegetarians. We were the first movement that was founded on prasadam, a vegetarian diet. There was no other movement. Now, there were vegetarians and so forth, but there was, I don't know of any other movement that was founded. One of the pillars was a vegetarian diet. So this is all, yes, this is all Prabhupada's influence, that these changes are coming in society. This is because of Prabhupada.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
So you said you have a court case with the UCLA over Krishna lunch and everything. So can we quote Srila Prabhupada's books in the court? Is it possible?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I do that quite a bit in our brief. All these quotes about from the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam about the things that we should eat and the way we should treat animals, that's a big part of our argument, because that's our religion. It's a complicated case. There's some complicated issues. But essentially, distributing prasadam is a core practice of the Krishna consciousness religion. Therefore, we're entitled to be protected under the free exercise clause of the First Amendment. So yeah, that's a huge argument in our case. You got to be a little careful. You got to use a little discretion, because these guys are all meat eaters themselves, you know. It's funny because Prabhupada told me, when we had the God We Trust and we were doing the political preaching, he told me, he said, you know, stay away from the four regular principles and the negative things. Don't do this, don't do that. Just emphasize the positive. Come and chant, come and take prasadam. But interestingly, he told Balavanta, emphasize the four regulated principles. So I'm kind of a hellfire and brimstone kind of person by nature. So I guess for me, he didn't want me to get carried away with all this negativity. You know, better to emphasize the positive. Come and take prasadam. And that's why we all stopped eating meat and stopped all these things. Was because of prasadam and chanting, not because we're advanced souls on our own, but the prasadam, we lost our taste for meat. We don't want to eat that anymore. Even these new products are coming out. Sometimes I won't eat them because they too much like the real thing. I don't want a product that imitates the taste of meat. Even that is a little offensive. So, but nonetheless, they're not killing animals. That movement is growing exponentially every day. New things are happening. These vegan products are selling like hotcakes, and all the big meat companies are now buying these products and investing in these companies. This is progress, because this will help us actually make more advancement, more progress in the future.
I wanted to share
The veggie burger industry is now a billion-dollar industry. People used to laugh.